You don't know how long I've been waiting to say this. Drake White, welcome to Ireland.
Thank you. It's a cool thing. It's something I've always dreamed of doing, just to kind of go all over the world. But I've always been drawn to the Irish culture and just the passion that those fans had last night was amazing. And I can't wait to see what, you know, Dublin has to offer. I mean, it's been amazing in the past, so I imagine it's going to be wild.
I mean, you're one of these performers that, you know, leaves it all on the stage. I've seen footage of you hanging from rooftops.
Yeah.
What is actually going through your mind when you're up there?
Man, it's really my therapy. I go for it. I go hard every day and definitely carpe all the diems. I don't really come up for air until I'm finished, you know. I go out there and I try to disconnect myself from reality. Mm-hmm. And my phone's never on me.
That was perfect timing.
Don't edit that out. That was amazing.
So you played C2C in London 2 years ago, and there was this instant shockwave off the back of your performance. There was like an almost immediate connection between yourself as a performer, your music, and the country fans over here. I mean, we were here in Dublin covering the event that year, and the word of mouth from your performance in London was filtering over to here. I know at the end of that year, you then came back and opened some shows for Kip Moore. Mm-hmm. Last October, you were part of the CMA Songwriter Series in Europe, mm-hmm. and then you came back again on your own headlining tour. We hear a lot about, you know, if you're willing to put the work in, the fans here are very loyal and they dig deep into an artist's complete catalogue. Are you seeing that every time you come back? Do you see the fan base grow?
Absolutely. I mean, every time we come back, it grows. You can tell people are sharing the word. And for me, I'm a hard worker from day one. I mean, I grew up splitting wood and cutting grass and, you know, building houses and all that stuff. So we came out here that first time and just had that opportunity. It actually started with just a bunch of songs in the round with Mac McAnally and Maren Morris and Christian Bush and I'm forgetting a couple, Liz Rose. But we got up there and it was almost like this buzz started happening there. And we had the after show party that night at the O2, at that smaller room in O2, and it was packed. I mean, there were people everywhere. I took a couple of good shots of scotch and just rocked it, you know, and had a great time, and the crowd was just vibing. It was one of those nights you could feel the heartbeat. You could literally feel it in the room, that there was some grease on the floor for sure. That's how it started. And so I think every time we come back, it's growing, and we're doing this on purpose. I believe you should go where you're celebrated, you know?
Yeah.
Go where people want to see you, and these fans over here want to see us, and so I'm going to be here, dang it.
I mean, growing up in Alabama, I know both your parents sang in the church choir. I believe around the age of 14, you started writing your thoughts and feelings down on paper, which mm-hmm. then evolved to songwriting. Tell me about what initially drew you to that.
You know, for me, I listened to my dad's record collection. I listened to Steely Dan, Allman Brothers. I listened to John Prine, to Crosby, Still, Nash & Young. And nature, out on the river fishing or water skiing or building something or, you know, trying to find airheads, Indian artifacts, or like just I was always out there gardening or just working. I would listen to the birds and listen to, you know, weather rolling in, the clouds and the wind and all that. And that's what drew me to all this, was a culmination of having an older sister who was always, you know, into everything from Pearl Jam to the Dixie Chicks. Mm-hmm. And then my mom and dad being baptized in the blood and dragging us to church every Sunday morning and hearing that, you know, beautiful gospel music. So rock and roll gospel and Garth Brooks and country.
And I believe there was a band in your high school who everybody would go and see. And there was a significant night when you filled in for the lead singer. You sang The Black Crowes, She Talks to Angels. And that was like a lightning switch.
Yeah, that's cool. That was the moment. Geppetto was the band. Adam Estes was the lead singer. And Josh Pledger was playing guitar around a fire. And he played quarterback for the football team. He was just like jamming, and we were sitting around a fire. And, you know, I don't think Adam was there, but, like, I remember it as they were struggling with, you know, just singing it. And I just started singing the song because I love the Black Crowes. And everybody was like, whoa, mm-hmm. you know, 15, 16, 17-year-old kids. When I got that validation from these older kids that were 2 and 3 and 4 years older than me, I was like, huh, that kind of planted a seed, you know?
Okay.
And the rest was kind of history. It didn't really jump for me until college, but that was the first time, you know? I'm glad you know that. That's crazy you know that.
Well, I know, like, you arrived in Nashville with an engineering degree, mm-hmm. and you initially worked for a construction company. So, I mean, having been to Nashville and knowing, like, how competitive it is, as somebody who doesn't sing or songwrite, I wouldn't know where to start. What were some of the sort of significant moments that have led to the break?
Well, I started playing at this bar that's popular now, but it wasn't then. It was called Losers. Me and John Party actually played from 10 to 2 on Monday nights. We played there with a couple of other buddies. Nobody said a word for like 3 or 4 years. And I was working construction and doing that as well, and playing songwriters nights at the Commodore and different places around Nashville. And just working, trying to figure out how to get in, you know, whatever in was. And I was working construction as well and just kind of halfway doing both things, you know. And long story short, I got fired from my construction job because of really the remnants of 2008 had happened. It was about 2010, 11. I took that severance pay and I bought a ticket to New Zealand. I'd always wanted to go there because I saw Lord of the Rings when I was like 13 and was like, I want to go where that's at. Mm-hmm. And that disconnect, that walkabout, I hitchhiked the whole South Island, learned how to surf, slept in tents, slept in hostels, slept in a hammock, you know, hung out on sailboats, you know, did all kind of stuff. And when I got back to Nashville, I tied myself to the pole, I say. It's a thing called Alabama Line. We kind of made it and birthed it with a couple of Alabama artists. And we played every Tuesday night at this place called the Blue Bar. There was nobody there at first, and eventually 25, 30, 40, 50, 80 turned into 100. And then, you know, randomly, Jeremy Stover walked in a bar one night. And Jeremy Stover, who's a producer, said, hey, man, are you working with anybody? I mean, what's going on? And that's the way Nashville works. You just don't ever know.
Mm-hmm. And Jeremy co-produced the Spark album with Ross Copperman. Yeah. Obviously, it came out in August of 2016. I know you co-wrote 11 of the 12 tracks. You were also involved in some of the production as well. Tell me a bit about the writing and recording of that album. And obviously, when it did come out, you toured it hard. So looking back on it now, what are your feelings on it?
I love that record. It was so hard to make because Ross was so busy, to tell you the truth. Jeremy was great to be on it, but it was a tough album to make. You know, I had certain songs, and it was just the label. It was the push and pull from the label, and it wasn't good or bad or indifferent. It was just, there was a creative tension there that forged that record, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm proud of what came out of it. You know, there's a lot of influences in that record. There's my solid country roots, and there's solid country songs from Waiting on the Whiskey to Work to Story. You know, a couple of more on there. Making Me Look Good Again, I think, should have been the song of the year, you know, in many cases. And Living the Dream did well at country radio in the States, and so did Making Me Look Good Again. But, hey, of course I've been frustrated at times. I believe that that record should have done, you know, great things. But it is, and it did. And I have to accept where I am at in this space and time and what the path that God's laid out for me. I have to accept that. And I get to accept that. I don't have to accept it. I get to accept it. And it's something that I'm at peace right now, you know, artistically. And yeah, I feel like Spark is a great introduction.
And in May of last year, you released the In Pieces EP. And I know there were co-writes on there with people like Brad Tursey from Old Dominion and Brent Cobb, who I just adore.
Yeah.
Busby was involved in the writing. He produced the EP. I am guessing that was you trying to find some common ground between the gospel Alabama Southern roots and American country radio.
You're spot on. It was a great thing. It was a good thing with my label at the time in Big Machine. And, you know, me just saying, hey, this is what I want to represent. I want to represent being from Muscle Shoals, that area, and being from Alabama. And I want to bridge that gap between the polished sound of Nashville and the rootsy sound of Muscle Shoals. And so the EP came out, and it, you know, I feel like it's great, you know.
I know you've opened for, I mean, Willie Nelson, Toby Keith, Eric Church, Dirk Bentley, Little Big Town. Tell me about being on those big tours and what you learned from that experience.
You know, to be and watch somebody play every night like that, that's been through the gamut and done it, and get to ask them questions and really befriend them, it's a must. You have to do it. I'm looking for the long run. I mean, I'm doing this for the, like I said, for the rest of my life. So I want that long, slow-burning career. Mm-hmm. And those guys have been vital in showing me the way. They blazed the path where I can get up there, and then I'm taking my own path, taking my own ways and blazing my own trails. But it's unbelievable to have Zach and Eric and those guys as mentors, and have them in my phone where I can call them. And, you know, I'm not saying I talk to them every day, but there's times where I've called these guys and been like, you know, what do you think on this? And you know what? Everybody just says, hey, man, all you got to do is make music. What's cool to you? What sounds good to you? Mm-hmm. Get in there and make it. Play your own guitar. Play your own riffs. Write your own songs. Listen to other songs. If it pierces you and it evokes a feeling in you, then cut it. Mm-hmm. You know, and cut it in a way that it could be your last song in the world, you know, for the rest of your life to cut. Mm-hmm. With that kind of passion, that kind of drive. I don't have any problem with that, but those guys are a must for me, and girls, you know. Mm-hmm. I've got some girl riding friends that are just bosses, and that's my community. That's my people.
And the fact you're on a bill even today with Ashley McBride, Lyle Lovett, and Chris Stapleton, and this is the most popular night of C2C. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a dream bill, right? Yeah, I mean, this is the best bill I've ever played. I love it. I would do this bill for the rest of the year. I mean, it's awesome. Yeah. I love, obviously, Stapleton. I think he is one of the best singers of all time, if not the best. Mm-hmm. His choices are amazing. It's like watching a virtuoso every night, mm-hmm. you know. So between him and, you know, you throw the Brothers Osborne on this tour and it would be them and Marin, I guess. But it's a dream, man, to come over here and watch your path and trust. Trust that this is your path, and wake up every day with a passion that you're going to focus on joy and gratitude, and say, you know what, it might be happening in Europe before it does in the States, and who cares? I get to do it.
Yeah,
I get to go out here and do it, so I'm happy, man. I'm happy to be out here rocking.
And just finally, at the end of last year, obviously, you released Drake White and the Big Fire, the live EP. And I have heard you say that, you know, moving forward, you're more interested perhaps in maybe releasing a couple of EPs throughout the year as opposed to one album every 2-3 years. Is that kind of the mindset?
Well, a lot of that was through the transition of, you know, of labels. I'm interested in releasing live music for sure the rest of my career, because our live shows are, there's some magic moments captured and created there. I'm going to say, for me, I write a lot, and I write a lot with a lot of different people. And the best way I know how to explain it is my ideas, as I am, you know, 25 to 30, 31, 32, 33, 34 years old, I am writing very sacred thoughts. These are sacred ideas. This is a period of my life. I don't want to be, you know, 40 writing about, you know,
girls, trucks, and beer.
Yeah. I don't want to be 40 writing, you know, her candy lips are over here. Nothing against those songs, but I'm saying they're sacred ideas that are coming out of me that we've written. And I've written these songs, and you try to fit them through the eye of a needle of country radio. And I love country radio. I've got a ton of friends over there, and I'm going to smash country radio one day. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have, I'm talking about American country radio. But there's so much more out there, and I write songs about, you know, I write kids' songs sometimes, and then I'll write songs about a certain rainstorm or a certain person's name or a trip to the grocery store. Who knows? I don't ever write to try to write a hit. Maybe that's the problem. I don't know. Maybe there's no problem. Hell, I don't know, man. I don't know what rabbit hole I'm going down tomorrow or today. I'm just out there doing what I love to do. You just got to follow your own bliss and follow your own thing and trust the path.
Yeah.
And for me, that path has led me here with Stapleton and Lyle and McBride tonight. And it's awesome. It feels really good. And I'm going to continue to make Oh, back to your question. I would love to release 50 songs a year. I mean, why not? Why not? The other Drake does it.
Yeah. You know?
Why not me?
Very good. Pleasure. Thank you for doing this. And thank you, Andrew, for setting this up. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Cool.
Good to be here.